Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing about the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership and about the Well Child Award. Then an organisation known as Digital Brighton and Hove will be telling us about the campaign they're running to help people become more proficient in the use of computers, tablets and smartphones. And Maya Davis will be scouring the Brighton Festival brochure to find some of the concerts that you can go to without having to spend vast amounts on the tickets. As usual, we'll be giving out various phone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started by hearing about the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership. You may remember that a couple of programmes ago, Maya Davis was talking to Caroline Whiteman from the Food Partnership about the community kitchen, which they've recently opened in Queen's Road in the centre of Brighton. Well, Maya thought she'd like to find out more about the Food Partnership as a whole, so she invited Caroline Whiteman to join us again. And she began this second interview by asking Caroline what the community kitchen means to them.
The community kitchen is in many ways the Food Partnership's dream scenario. We have been delivering cookery courses all over the city of Brighton and Hove for over 10 years. And generally these were happening in church halls and community centres. And when we were offered the space on Queen's Road as part of Community Base, we couldn't believe our luck that such a wonderful space was made available to us. And so we started to put our heads together to envisage the best space that we could and explore how we could fund such a place.
So this is an arm of the Brighton Food Partnership, is that right?
Yeah, this is our flagship project for the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership.
And how long has the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership been in existence?
Over 10 years now. So We've changed a lot over the years. We've been based in out in Port Slade originally, and then we moved to the centre of Brighton, and now we're very happy to be in Community Base.
Excellent. So what sort of activities do you run? Can you give me an idea of the range?
It's almost a dizzying array, Maya. We can be doing anything in one day, from working with a schools group to doing a food photography session to running a masterclass, all in the same day. And the next day could be a dementia-friendly cookery group, followed by a cooking on a budget group, followed by a chocolate workshop. It encompasses all areas of the food landscape in the city of Brighton and Hove. I think we're picking up momentum. People know we're there now. They're very excited about some of the courses that come on stream. There are a lot of extremely well-known and successful chefs in the city now, and people are absolutely clamouring for more and more courses from them.
You're getting support from professional chefs in Brighton.
Yeah, we've been overwhelmed from the very beginning by the support of the culinary community, if you will, in the city. We've got some of the top chefs who have helped us with our crowdfunding campaign, which was one of the main things that brought the kitchen into being. And chefs are doing fundraisers on a regular basis. And they're also offering straightforward commercial courses as well that people can pay to come and attend and learn new skills, everything from fish filleting to charcuterie to vegan baking. We do the works.
That sounds absolutely brilliant. So you've got those courses that are being paid for, And then you've got the other courses that you mentioned, like the dementia friendly and cooking on a budget, that sort of thing. Do people pay for those?
That's right. We have what we call our community courses, which tend to happen in the daytime, and we're attracting more and more people to those as well. And we occasionally ask for donations on those courses. So cooking on a budget, we request a £5 donation per week if people are in a position to do so, although we wouldn't deny somebody the opportunity to participate in that course if that wasn't possible for them. And the dementia-friendly cookery club is a free club. We try and keep the costs as low as possible for people because we want to attract the people who really need these courses to learn basic cookery skills so that they can eat well and on a budget.
How do people enrol on these courses?
The majority of our participants come through our website, though we know that not everybody in the city is using the internet. So we also have a phone number. And also people do pick up the leaflets that we have outside the front door and will sometimes call us on the back of that once they've seen a course that they like the look of. Those are the main ways.
People can not just drop in then?
No, that we don't take participants that way, because the cooks and chefs who run the courses need to know how many people are coming, and we need to know what support people need. So unfortunately, we don't have any drop in. The closest thing we have to that actually is going to be the Dementia Friendly Cookery Club that I've talked to you about in another program. And if people have any questions, then they're very welcome to call in and we can talk it through with them.
Okay, that's fine. Perhaps you can give us the phone number and the web address.
Yeah, our website address is bhfood.org.uk, and our telephone number, which is the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership, is 01273 234 810.
Okay. Now, are you run entirely by professionals, or do you have volunteers?
We've got a rather wonderful army of volunteers who help support our courses, both the commercial and the community courses. And to be honest with you, Maya, without them, it would be very hard to run the kitchen the way that we do. And we found that the people who volunteer with us are incredibly dedicated, very passionate, reliable, and really get a great deal out of the volunteering experience.
How do people get round to volunteering with you then? Do they have to apply or something?
Yeah, we take applications online, and we have a volunteer coordinator. So email would be the first place to try. And the email address is jo@bhfood.org.uk. Or people can just call the number that I gave earlier, and we can pass on a message and someone will call you back.
Hmm. Now, what about you? How did you get involved in this?
Well, I was a participant on a Brighton and Hove Food Partnership cookery course many moons ago, back in 2009, and I was on a cookery leaders training course to lead cookery courses in the community. And on the back of that course, I started volunteering for the Food Partnership, and little by little, my role expanded. And I started leading cookery courses, and I started delivering gardening programmes and garden mentoring schemes. And 10 years later, here I am doing more of the same, but it's ever evolving. And now we have this beautiful new space in which we can deliver these cookery programmes, as well as our community gardens and community garden support that we offer to other schemes around the city.
What have you found most rewarding about being involved?
Well, on any given day, I might give you a different answer. So sometimes it's just the delicious food and the lovely people that I get to work with. Some days it's being out in Preston Park, looking at all the vegetables that the volunteers have grown with such passion and dedication. And other days it's working with the team of volunteers who are just such a brilliant bunch of people and so enthusiastic and just pulling together with everybody else to make food accessible, fresh and delicious for the residents of the city.
Thank you very much.
Maya Davis was talking to Caroline Whiteman of the Brighton and Hove Food Partnership about their community kitchen, which has recently opened in Queen's Road in Brighton. If you'd like to find out more, you could go to their website, which is www.bhfood.org.uk. That's www.bhfood, which is typed all as one word with no spaces, .org.uk. Or you can phone them on Brighton 234 810. That's 01273 234 810. Well, as I've said in the past, it's quite difficult to keep Chris English out of our studio, even when it's not his turn to present the programme. And he's here again today to tell us about an award scheme that he's just heard about. Over to you, Chris.
It's my pleasure to welcome to the programme Gabby Roslin and Colin Dyer. And talking about Well Child Awards. Ladies first. Gabby, good morning and welcome.
Hello, Chris. Thank you very much.
And tell us, what's the Well Child Awards all about?
Well, the Well Child Awards are all about celebrating young people and healthcare professionals and young people with extraordinary illness, things that you might not have ever heard of, how they cope day to day. Also young people who might be there to help others, about people who volunteer, about healthcare professionals, and it's about celebrating them. None of them complain, none of them moan. They all get on with what they have incredibly, and it's a very humbling experience to meet them all.
And you've got with you Colin Dyer, who's involved in the organisation. Good morning,
he's
Colin.
He's the CEO. He's not just involved, he's the boss.
Colin, good morning.
Morning.
How do you go about choosing who can be up for an award?
It's practically impossible. It's probably the most difficult job we do during the year. We receive hundreds and hundreds of nominations for these awards. It's a pretty special thing to win. And we ask people when they nominate to try as much as they can to give us enough information about the reason that they're nominating the young person or the health professional or the volunteer or whatever it might be. Really focusing on what they've done, if it's one of the health professionals, to go above and beyond, or with the young person, just how they've demonstrated the inspirational nature in coping with what in some cases are very, very serious illnesses.
And so are the nominations for the carers, or are they for the children themselves?
They're for both. So we have lots of different categories for these awards. We've got inspirational child, inspirational young person, most caring child or young person. So lots of young people's awards, and then also nurse, doctor, professional, volunteer, lots of awards like that. So we're really looking at it from all angles.
Now, a lot of the people listening to this programme are elderly parents or grandparents, in some cases great-grandparents. So can they be involved, or are they too far removed from the child who would be qualifying?
Oh, no. I mean, we get nominations from all sorts of people. We get nominations from grandparents and great-grandparents and work colleagues and all sorts of things. Anybody at all can nominate somebody for a Well Child Award, and it's a really, really easy process.
And you've had a royal connection in the past. Now, I suspect that perhaps the Duchess of Sussex is unlikely to be there because she's about to, time the awards are presented, she'll either have a baby or very nearly ready for one.
No, well, Chris, she's going to have her baby very soon, and the awards are in the autumn. And funnily enough, when you have a baby, you are able to do things afterwards. I managed it twice. I don't know how, but I did. And so shall we. Yes, he's patron of the charity. So we're hoping, of course, that he will, of course, be there.
Right. I didn't realise that the presentations are in the autumn. So that puts a different section on it. How do people actually get round to making a nomination if they've got...
Okay, so there's a website that they go to, which is wellchild, it's all one word, .org.uk. That's wellchild.org.uk. And they have to get the nominations in by the 7th of May, and then we'll be judging, and then we'll let them know if they've won.
Is there a short list, or is it straight from nominations to the awards themselves?
Oh, well, they honestly, it's actually quite a long process because we, as we said, it closes on the 7th of May. Then there's a big judging panel. It gets shortlisted. Then there's a judging panel where the winners are then decided, and then the winners get told, and so they all come along to the event.
So the nomination process is there. And what sort of detail do you need, or does the nominator need to provide?
It's a really simple form on the website. So if people take a look at wellchild.org.uk, it's a really simple form. We don't ask for too much because we get, as I say, we get nominations from all sorts of people. It's just a really simple description of why they've nominated. If we need more information, we'll get in touch. And then, as Gabby says, we very, very carefully sift through all of those nominations before we create a short list for the external judging panel, which is made up of lots of different people, including Gabby. I'm very fortunate not to sit on that, so I don't have to make the final decision. But we have paediatricians, we have celebrities like Gabby, we have supporters, ambassadors, all sorts of people who sit on an external panel to decide the final winners.
And a question for Gabby. As a mum, how important are these awards?
Very. When I get sent the shortlist, my kids now, I've got two girls, and they know that I lock myself away and I am in tears, which is, and I don't mean that in a patronising way, but it's just the work that you see that people do, the lives that people lead, and they all do it with a smile on their face. And I'm somebody who believes very strongly in living each day with a smile on your face, and these young people and healthcare professionals do. So for me, it's quite remarkable to be a part of this.
And is it about going the extra mile?
Absolutely, it is. It's about what you cope with and not. They don't moan. You know, I don't know whether you wake up in the morning, Chris, and moan about something, or maybe you didn't sleep well, or you've got a cold, or your foot's sore, or got a hangover, whatever it may be, Chris. But these people don't do that. They just get on with life and with a smile on their face and being incredible. They don't want to be told they're brave. They don't want to be told, well done. But we all stand there at the event and we give them a pat on the back and say, you are wonderful.
And in the autumn, when will the awards take place and where?
It's in the autumn. We cannot tell you yet, to do with royal protocol. So there we go, Chris. There's an insider info for you.
And something to look forward to. And is it something that the public can attend, or is it purely an event for the nominees?
You'll be able to read about it in the magazines and in the newspapers.
Look forward to that and look forward to hearing more about it. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris English was talking to Gabby Roslin and Colin Dyer about the forthcoming Well Child Awards. If you'd like to find out more about the award, or indeed nominate somebody for it, you can get more information from their website, which is at wellchild.org.uk. And Well Child there is spelt like a single word with no gaps. That's wellchild.org.uk. And a reminder that nominations must be in by May the 7th. Well, changing the subject, I don't know about you, but it sometimes seems to me that whatever you want to do these days, even such things as checking bus and train times, getting weather forecasts, finding bargains in the shop, or even catching up on your favourite TV programme, you've got to go on the internet, or to use the official term, online, to do it. And for older people like me, and indeed some not so old people, that prospect can seem rather daunting, especially if you've never done it before. Well, help is on hand from a local organisation called Digital Brighton and Hove. To find out more about them, I invited David Skerr to come and join me in the studio. And when he did so, I started by asking him to say what Digital Brighton and Hove is all about.
Digital Brighton and Hove is a local project which really aims to help those that feel a little bit left behind by the digital age and, you know, all these range of services now going online. And we try to help them feel a little bit more confident and equipped, really, to access online services and also to really enjoy and make the most of the opportunities and benefits that you can get from using the internet and from being online. It's run by a charity called Citizens Online, which is a digital inclusion charity, who run a range of different projects across the UK. And the Brighton and Hove project has been running since, I think it's just been over 3 years.
Do you find that a lot of your customers are older people?
Well, we tend to work with a range of different groups of people that are feeling a little bit left behind by a lot of services going online. We have done a lot of work with older people. If I give you a bit of context to give you an idea of who is offline, if we're looking at the adult population in the UK, for instance, we're looking at about 9% of people that are offline, so they're not using the internet at all. And about 80% of that group are sort of over 65s. So that's about 3.5 million across the UK. But the good news is that there are also more and more older people that are accessing the internet and are finding it more accessible and easier to use thanks to touchscreen technology and devices like tablets and smartphones now really coming into the fore. So that's really helping them enjoy and being able to access services that are online in a much easier way.
And it's a great way of finding out about the world, isn't it?
Accessing the internet is a great way for our our older clients, let's say, to engage with some of their hobbies and their interests, so more leisure activities. And that's really important for us because the one of the main barriers for this particular group of non-users, if you like, is sort of lack of motivation and, you know, lack of interest in getting online. So if we can find out what they're interested in and what they enjoy doing, usually there's something that you can do online and digitally to really carry on exploring those interests and those hobbies. And yeah, like you said, lots of information out there about the world. So for curious people, it's a great way of carrying on those hobbies and those different interests they might have.
And keeping in touch with the rest of the family, of course.
Absolutely. So that's something that we've done a lot of work regarding helping those that maybe feel a little bit socially isolated or housebound for various reasons. Could be health issues, could be other things. And actually, when we are able to get them on a tablet and get them to use online platforms or communication services like WhatsApp or Facebook, it's a really great way for them to reconnect, if you like, and keep in touch with friends and families, sharing photos using WhatsApp, you know, posting updates on Facebook. So the social media side of things and those different messaging platforms is very popular, and it's something that we get asked a lot about in our sort of digital gadget sessions and drop-ins. There's a lot of interest around actually being able to use those different social media platforms.
So what services do you provide?
If we take, for example, sheltered housing schemes, we run regular digital gadget drop-ins for residents across the 23 schemes in Brighton. We've run over maybe close to 600 sessions now. And this is one-to-one sort of learning. It's learner-led, so people can come with whatever query they might have about setting up a smartphone or tablet, about using Facebook, setting up an email account. And we work with a range of organisations and local organisations. You can provide also the support out there in the community. So we've got over 400 very friendly digital champions in Brighton and Hove who will help those that need that kind of support in different localities. Because we're such a small team, we run as a network, so we work with over 200 local organisations who are also trying to really tackle digital exclusion across the city. And a lot of organisations are providing different services, different digital drop-ins, it can be some workshops and some courses. We list them all online on a website called digitalbrightonandhove.org.uk, and there you can search by postcode and by locality where the nearest free internet access point is, or in a community venue near you, and where you can find the sort of support. Of course, if you're offline, you might not be aware of this information online, so we've also got some leaflets across the city in different community venues where you can access a phone number, call us to find out where you can find that kind of support. If I share with your listeners some different activities that we do, for instance, with Age UK, we run an Internet Essentials course. It's the 14th edition now, so it's a six-week course. It's always very popular. And that's really a six-week program where we're going through the very basics of how to use a computer and how to connect with a web browser to online safety and other questions like that. So that's more of a sort of structured course. And then we also run, we work with charities like Impact Initiatives, who have a Hot 50 Plus service where they have one-to-one tech buddies, and some of our volunteer digital champions will be in, for instance, in the cafe and on the Hove site off Palmyra Square on Thursdays for 2 hours, and it's just having a tea and a cup of coffee and coming over to our digital champions there to really help with anything related to digital. And we also are starting some digital drop-ins in their site in Coldean, the largest cafe. That's currently monthly. And then there's also really valuable service provided by the libraries services across the city, who have Library Connect volunteers who are digital champions in libraries who can provide one-to-one support, sort of tailored support. And you can book one-to-one sessions with their volunteers. So you get 45-minute sessions. And again, you can come up with any sort of inquiry relating to a computer. In the Hangleton and Knoll project, they have digital drop-ins called Hack It, and they take place every week. I think that's on Wednesdays, and that's if you're in the Hangleton and Knoll area. There's also AGK in Seven Dials. You have some regular drop-ins there in there, and you know, they've got good computer facilities. Anyone can have access to those services, and there is some help there from volunteers. And we also run an Internet Essentials course there on Fridays. And then we'd also be running some digital workshops, actually, at the Brighton Unemployed Centre Families Project in Kemptown in Brighton. And we'll be running weekly workshops free of charge on how to get started with a tablet, a smartphone, how to stay safe online, how to get started with WhatsApp, and how to get started with Facebook. So that will be some good taster sessions there. We've just started doing some digital job clubs. So that's, you know, helping people to find job opportunities or volunteering opportunities and help them to create a CV and upload it online. We're doing that at the Bevy, so the community pub in Morecambe Bevan Dean, and we're doing that every Thursday at the moment, and we're kind of linking it to the community lunch they have there. So, you know, again, you don't have to come solely to find a new job. You could be out there having a nice lunch and have a question about something digitally related, and we've got two digital champions there every Thursday afternoon from 1 till 3 at the moment. So yeah, we try to really integrate it within the community, so you don't feel like you need to book on a course or travel too far to access that, you know, this kind of support, but it's actually, you know, embedded in the local community. So that's why we work with so many different organisations. So a range of services out there.
I suppose the best way for people to find out about them would be to go to your website, wouldn't it? Can you remind me what the address of the website is?
digitalbrightonandhove.org.uk.
Okay, thanks, David. And perhaps I should say that if you happen to be a person who isn't yet online and hence can't go to the website, you can find out more information by phoning Digital Brighton and Hove. And their phone number is 074 75 946 084. And David, you were just giving me a long list of activities which Digital Brighton and Hove runs throughout the Brighton and Hove area. Is there a charge for any of these?
No, so those examples I mentioned are services that are provided by local providers in terms of the workshops and the sessions we run ourselves, because the project is funded in part by Brighton Hove City Council, and we get some funding through the National Lottery Community Fund. There's no charge for these workshops. We also try to align some of these activities with different festivals out there. So, for instance, we were running a series of very informal sessions during Older People's Festival, which your listeners might have heard of, which runs in the autumn. And there, again, we run free sessions, free workshops.
So if we're talking about a person who has no experience of computers, as you say, there are quite a few adults around to whom that applies, and they want to dip a toe in the water, what should they do in the first instance, do you think?
I think the most important thing is helping people with their confidence and their skills when it comes to digital literacy. Some of our older learners think they are digitally illiterate and they don't have the confidence using, for instance, a desktop computer. They might not feel comfortable using a mouse and connecting to Internet Explorer using this kind of device, but they may already be using email apps and WhatsApp apps with their smartphone. So I think there's a real shift there in terms of technology and accessibility, and actually what people need to realize that are reluctant to delve into this digital space, if you like, is that it is much more user-friendly now. And it's not just using computers. You know, you don't necessarily need to even have a computer if you want to be keeping in touch with people using, say, Facebook or you know, sending emails to people. You can be doing this using what's now becoming more affordable technology like tablets, which are very popular with older people, and they realize that there's a lot they can already do with that. So I think it's really starting with the thing that they will really find enjoyable, and that's usually linking that to their interests and their hobbies. And everyone has lots of different hobbies and interests, and usually you can enhance that joy of engaging with a particular subject matter. You can usually enhance that by being online. So that would be the sort of first step, is finding that initial hook that people are excited about, and showing them what you can do with that in a very simple way online. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with a computer. There's plenty of support out there, hopefully, you know, in different community venues near you, including libraries. And, you know, we're running sessions in a range of community venues across Brighton and Hove. You can find some digital champions. So these aren't IT people or IT experts. They are basically friendly people who want to help. You enjoy being online and feel more confident. And then through really sort of light touch learning, hopefully get them excited about the opportunities and the positive things that you can do online. And getting in touch with us is probably the first step.
So how do people get in touch with you?
If our listeners out there are already online, I'd say the best way would be to first of all have a look at our signposting website. So that's Digital Brighton and Hove, in one word, lowercase, .org for organisation.uk. They can also call us. We've got a number that we try to answer. If we're not available, they can leave a voicemail with their phone number. And that number is 07475 946 084. Or if they're comfortable sending us an email and they've got an email account set up already, they can contact us by email at digitalbh, that's digitalbh for Brighton and Hove, at citizensonline.org.uk.
David, thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Richard.
David Skerr has been telling me about the activities of Digital Brighton and Hove. I'll just repeat the contact details that he gave there. You can find out more information about them from their website, which is at www.digitalbrightonandhove, typed all as one word, .org.uk. You can phone them on 07475 946 084. You can email them, and the email address is digitalbh, which is typed all as one word, at citizensonline, which is also typed as one word, .org.uk. Well, I was talking earlier about the time of year in connection with bluebells, and also at this time of the year, we're on the verge of the opening of this year's Brighton Festival. As usual, our keen-eyed reporter, Maya Davis, has been scanning the festival brochure to find events that you can go to without having to pay vast amounts of money. Not a particularly easy job, I would think, Maya.
Well, leaving aside the basic problem that a lot of the best events are booked up by friends of the festival even before the brochure's available to the general public, many people find that at this stage only the most expensive seats are left for some of the big attractions. And then others prefer to wait till details of the fringe become available before making a final choice, largely because most of those events are considerably cheaper. But what if you want to attend festival events and have financial restrictions? Well, that's why I've been trawling through this year's Brighton Festival brochure to flag up events which won't break the bank, specifically those events which cost no more than £10. Well, obviously there are a lot of free events, most of them family-friendly. The Children's Parade on the 4th of May, which traditionally marks the start of the main festival, is free to watch. It's always impressive to see how much time and effort has gone into preparing the children for this, and it means that right from the start they begin to think of the festival as relevant to them. You can also catch the Brighton and Hove Music and Arts event, showcasing the best of local young musicians. They'll be performing for free at the Pitch Perfect sites. The trail starts on the 4th of May at 1 o'clock, at Moshimo in Bartholomew Square. After taking you to the foyer of the Dome, it leads you to a range of other pitches in central Brighton. Performers cover a range of genres, catering for lovers of pop, folk, big band, string quartets and wind ensembles, so something for everyone, provided you're prepared to walk around Brighton and stand in a variety of venues. But if you're more interested in theatre, art and photography, there are free exhibitions and events at Fabrica in the Lanes, Lighthouse in North Lane, the Phoenix Gallery near St Peter's Church, and in the Founders' Room of the Dome. These run for either all or most of the festival, but you'll need to check for opening times. Some have restricted space, And for those, you need to get a free ticket from the Dome box office. During the weekend of the 17th to the 20th of May, you can explore the moon for free in Queen's Park. No spaceship required, and you can bring a picnic. The Storytelling Army also pop up in Queen's Park on the 18th of May at 6:30. But that's one of the free events for which you need a ticket. Alternatively, you can pay £4 to charity and attend the Storytelling Army event in the cafe bar at Worthing Pavilion. There are also some free partnership events with Our Place, notably at the Manor Gym near Bristol Gardens on the 18th of May and at Hangleton Community Centre on the 25th of May, as well as a free afternoon of events at the foot of the I-360 on the 11th of May. Now, the brochure also claims that there are over 100 events costing £10 or less. I've not counted them all, and I have no intention of doing so, but I can confidently say that, apart from the ones I've mentioned already, most of the lunchtime and afternoon events fall into that category. Most of these are literary events at the Brighthelm Centre, Brighton and Hove High School, or Brighton and Hove Prep School, many costing £7.50. One or two evening events at Brighton and Hove High also cost no more than £10, including, on the 11th of May at 8 o'clock, storytelling by writers from East Africa and Latin America. The Brighthelm Centre hosts events for children of various ages on the 18th and 19th of May, with all tickets in the price range £6 to £8. Some events have combined tickets for one adult plus one child. For example, a £10 ticket covers you and a child aged between 2 and 5 to one of the Apples and Snakes events in the Founders Room at the Dome on the 12th of May. And there are also four children's events in the Founders Room on the 26th of May. So if you're left holding the grandchildren over the weekend, you've got a lot of choice without having to break the bank. There are also events at 8:30 p.m. at the I-360 between the 23rd and the 26th of May. These are aimed at young people, or anyway, those who feel young. There's no admission price. The idea is that people pay what they can to watch and participate in this joint dance, music and performance collaboration by groups from Bristol and North London. There are also some bigger literary events in larger venues, most notably Ben Okri at the Dome on the 7th of May. It's not often that you can see and hear an internationally acclaimed writer talk about his work for £10, but this is one of those occasions, and that's probably my pick of the non-musical events. But for mainstream musical events under £10, you can't do any better than the lunchtime concerts at St Nicholas Church, All Saints Church, Hove, the Old Market and the Theatre Royal. These showcase the young people tipped to be the great performers of the future, in genres ranging from jazz to modern classical music inspired by myth. And of course, that includes the Gerwood Young Artists, who are supported by Glyndebourne. Full details of those events are on pages 64 and 65 of the brochure. The festival standby scheme is also running again. This allows you to turn up at more expensive events about an hour before the start and buy any remaining tickets for £10. There are some restrictions. If you're not a member of one of the specified trades unions, a festival member or an artist, or in possession of a pay it forward voucher, you need to be either under 26 or over 60 or registered disabled or in receipt of certain benefits. Well, despite these conditions, I have a feeling that the scheme is actually open to a slightly wider range of people than in previous years, but I could be wrong. Anyway, full details are in the festival brochure or on their website. Of course, you can't guarantee that there will be any standby tickets for some of the more popular events, but it's always worth a try. Well, I hope I've managed to suggest some of the festival events you can attend for £10 or less. But there are lots of other events in the festival. For full information, either hunt down a brochure or go to their website, www.brightonfestival.org. I hope you find something you can attend and enjoy.
Thanks, Maya. You've made a good job of that, as always. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. That'll be presented by Chris English, and I'll be back with you in 4 weeks. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways of getting in touch. You can either contact me by email at the following address, info@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's info, spelt I-N-F-O, at greymattersproductions, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. Or you can contact me via the Radio Reverb website. If you go to the website and find the page that's devoted to At Home This Morning, you can send me an email from there. And whichever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening, and until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning has been a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.